Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford.
Josh Brown, did I say my name? I think I did.
You did.
Don't worry about it, because we've got plenty of games to talk about, mainly this time from the Ubisoft and Capcom showcases. Now, the latter of which didn't go down very well at all.
Well, it didn't last year either,
no.
I should add. They are kind of weird when it comes to showcases, Scott.
the way that the summer season's still kind of ongoing. There's still the Ryuga Kotoku one to go. I forget what else is on the horizon, but most of them are done.
We've got Annapurna Interactive at
yes.
Very end of the month, but that's not for a few weeks yet. Yes. I think it's the 29th of June.
Whereas there was a massive salvo between Xbox and I'm blanking on the rest of them, but there's the Summer Games Fest, been Future Games Show.
There you go.
They're everywhere.
You've got Sony's conference, you've got Ubisoft's conference, Microsoft's conference, Capcom's conference. There's been a lot of conferences.
It's a lot of conferences. I'm not going to lie. It's very warm in the UK. You might have heard about the heat wave that's doing the rounds. It's burned my brain. I was off for my wife's birthday. It was a very lovely time going away to the Lake District. Would recommend it, but I've come back very out of it.
You got a lot of hay fever as well.
Oh my God. Shout out to the hay fever people. The peeps putting up with the amount of bung that arrives on a daily basis when you've got hay fever.
I'll tell you what, man. Like,
horrible.
I don't have hay fever, fortunately, but the other week I was off with a cold.
Right.
And I feel like that's just lingered. You know, when one just won't shift and you're kind of snotty more than you want to be. And it's like, man, why can't my body just heal? I think it's because I've been on so many trains.
Right.
I hate trains so much, especially when they're hot. What kind of infrastructure? British infrastructure are trains running on, man, because they're absolutely useless and they're boiling in the never on time.
It's just...
And it costs so much money.
If it was Dylan Moran who just said... No, it's like an air... He referred to an aeroplane as just a giant tube of farts that's going through the sky. And it's very much the case with a train where you're locked in there. It's sweaty. It's humid. It feels like you could lick the air itself.
Oi,
it's not good.
This is not the child's fault. I would never be annoyed at a child, but I just want to tell you about the horribleness of this situation. I was coming back from Glasgow yesterday, in fact, and I was on this boiling hot train, and there was a kid in front of me, clearly travel sick, who was sicking into a bag.
Oh no.
Right in front of me. And it's like 30 degrees. And I had to move, man, because it was just like, I was hungover as well. And I was just thinking like, oh, I wish the Lord would take me now.
I love you being hungover, but the kid's the one being sick.
I know, right?
Like,
I know.
Channeling it like spiritually through this other being
to
excise the evil. But yeah, one thing that might save us all is video games. And we'll run down the Ubisoft conference and the Capcom conference because it's just games left, right, and center. Ubisoft, I thought had quite a solid showcase this year. A lot of gameplay stuff, a lot of safe bets, but we did get a lot more gameplay for Star Wars Outlaws. And we'll, like I said, we'll break all these things down one by one. But what did you think of Star Wars Outlaws?
I'm so mixed in all of these games. I want to get out in front and say this because they have so many elements that I'm intrigued by, but so many elements that make me think that Ubisoft hasn't really changed much from a creative standpoint. And Star Wars Outlaws was, again, a mixed bag for me because visually it looks spectacular.
Yeah.
The scale of it is excellent. You know, I love any game, Starfield included, that allows you to go from the ground into space
yes.
and then all over space and have an open world on that level. So obviously when you when the game kept when the trailer for the game kept peeling back the layers of itself. That was really exciting, but I couldn't help but notice how much it looked like a Ghost Recon.
It is Ghost Recon, isn't it?
Yeah, in terms of like the open world design and even some of the movement systems. You know, obviously it's by the developers of The Division, but I just, for whatever reason, got mad Ghost Recon vibes from it, and it made me think that, yes, this demo looks quite interesting, but how is it going to play on a moment-to-moment basis? Mm. Because that's what always kills me personally with Ubisoft titles. Mm. It's that they have cool things within them, but when you settle into their gameplay loops, it becomes so rote and familiar that the magic of chasing two guys on a speeder bike and having those firefights and then going to space is kind of lost through the gaminess of them, and that's weird to say, but I feel that a lot with this company.
I'm kind of hoping that, because that's kind of the thing coming out of this, where it was like the new Avatar game, Frontiers of Pandora, we'll get to that in a bit, but I felt like that was ostensibly a Far Cry skin, and you're clearing out the settlements, you're doing the knee slides, using the assault rifles. If you just showed that part of that demo to people, I think they would just think it is a new Far Cry. And then for Star Wars Outlaws, like, as much as in both cases they've got these bigger IPs and there's bigger expectation, the guts of the thing seem very safe and seem very like what they've done before. And it's not necessarily a takeaway from either game. Like, they seem solid enough for what they're going for. But Star Wars Outlaws being the next Ghost Recon in the mold of Wildlands or Breakpoint, it made me think of that original, I think it was the Wildlands demo, where they tried to walk through like a car chase. It was like going after a certain target, and then the dude left and he was on a bike, and they tried to like fake all the gameplay chatter between the players, being like, oh, you know, he's on your left and watch this and go chase the guy down and whatever. And I got a little bit of that in the Outlaws demo when like they left the compound, it went into a car chase, then the person, you know, take them out and go back to the HQ and get do the bounty and everything. But I do like the idea of the seamlessness of that. I think one of the promises of the new gen is like eliminating load time, and I do like the idea of just this really cool seamless Star Wars experience. But at the same time, like, if the guts of it are Ghost Recon, then like you said, you're like, that gameplay loop is like a 30-minute loop, if that, and then it's just that for like 30 hours or whatever.
Well, this is it. I mean, when the demo starts and you get the first taste of gameplay, and it's the lead character sneaking around doing one button takedowns and then emerging from stealth into a gunfight, I kind of thought,
I've done this
so many times before and it looked good, but if that was all it had to offer, or if the open world was all it had to offer, or if the space combat was all it had to offer, I would say that as individual parts, they didn't blow me away. But it's what you said, all of them locked together on that scale, with, you know, definitely a sense of ambition behind it. That's what makes me interested in the game. How is all of that going to knit together? How are they going to keep that going for however many hours that the game is, you know, going to play out for? I really like Massive, the studio behind it. It is Same. Massive, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
The people behind The Division, I thought The Division had a lot of potential. It just was kind of stifled by its online components. And I think Ubisoft Reflections is also working on it. So I want this team to do well. I really do. I think they have a lot of promise. They're one of my favorite teams within Ubisoft in terms of what they've put out and the games that I've enjoyed and where I think they could go from here. And I just kind of hope that this is a step up from The Division, and they're able to focus on single player stuff. They're able to weave in an interesting story, which it seems like they're doing, admittedly, through like the dialogue that we saw, the cutscenes that we saw. Feels like it's doing a lot, and I hope they manage to thread the needle, like you said, and bring it together.
I always think, especially now because we're on the other side of the sequel trilogy, whatever you want to call it, I think Star Wars Secret Weapon is a lack of expectation. I think I've said that somewhere when I was being recorded, but I put that on the record. I think that when you think about Andor, no one cared about Andor when that show was announced. No one gave a hoot about that show. It's phenomenal. It's the best Star Wars TV show by a considerable distance. It's brilliant. Same, to some degree, with Fallen Order and then with Jedi Survivor. Like, they're sort of like a nice little side story. Like, Cal Kestis, like, so far, I don't think has appeared in anything else yet. It's like his own little side thing. And because of that, like, there's, like, you know, there was some expectation because it was Respawn, but it was them trying a third-person game. And they'd been given Star Wars, and EA's track record with Star Wars at the time was horrible, so a complete lack of expectation, and it flew. And Jedi Survivor is brilliant, providing you play on the quality mode and avoid the performance one. So I'm like, in this case, when the cutscene started rolling out for Outlaws and it showed the character talking to people and moving through that world, I was like, okay, it's Ubisoft. There's a lack of expectation for an open world because, well, at least there's a certain amount because we know what we're going to be getting. But I hope that works. And I think because it's Star Wars, for me, like, if I talk about Star Wars things that I've genuinely enjoyed or loved, I only have Andor and Jedi Fallen Order / Jedi Survivor.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, I don't have anything else. And so I think that Star Wars as an overall IP works better when it fragments itself more and just goes, here's a nice little slice of Star Wars. Here's a little side story with all the wider trimmings, rather than it be a Skywalker-sized thing.
Well, this is a pure taste thing again, but I don't know how I feel about just having a slice of Star Wars because, again, from what I want out of the franchise, I was looking at this on display and kind of thinking, is it for me? Is this set in what I want out of this fiction? Do I want a kind of grittier Star Wars tale that focuses on the underworld and bounty hunters and whatnot?
Scoundrels,
perfect. Perfect.
As soon as they refer to
the
main character as a scoundrel, I was, oh, can you not? Can you not use that one word that we use to describe everyone who's a thief in Star Wars? Yeah, just be anyone else at all.
That's it, right? I don't know if that's for me because I look at it and I think, what's drawing me to this? It kind of, to me, is an excuse for them to kind of blur the lines with something like Ghost Recon, yet have it still be Star Wars-y in nature. And that's an entire me thing. It's just because I'm more interested in the Jedi and, you know, the grander elements of that franchise. But yeah, with that not doing it for me and then the gameplay itself not completely blowing me away, I'm kind of, I'm very mid on it. I'm very kind of lukewarm on it. Luke Skywalker warm on it, as it were. But I want to see more and hopefully it shapes up nicely because even though I'm mid on it, I'm still way more hype on it than I have been for an Ubisoft game in about 3-4 years.
Yeah, we'll get to the Prince of Persia stuff because that's my only Ubisoft game that I've cared about in a long time. I don't even remember the last time I really cared about an Ubisoft game. Maybe like Valiant Hearts or Child of Light or something. That's 2014. It's been a long time. But yeah, for Star Wars, that wider stuff for me, like, it's like Rogue One, like it adds to the big stuff. And it's like, okay, because all these other things were happening, it makes that middle story like more impressive or something like that. Like, they're not going to go into specifics, but there's a certain reveal in Jedi Survivor towards the end where a character is introduced or it like, comes in that ties it into everything else. And I hate that bit.
Right.
I think you really liked it. And I think a lot of people do.
That's it. It's like I say, it's a pure taste thing, but with me, Star Wars, because I was never an expanded universe guy. I was
never a TV show
guy. I never watched the Clone Wars or anything like that. I'm not saying they're bad, just not my thing. To me, Star Wars was an event. Every installment was a big thing. It moved the world onwards. Moved the world forwards. And it was all I knew. I didn't know about the expanded stuff. So I didn't live in it as a world that just had all of these stories propping it up. So I come to Star Wars for that event feeling. And both the Jedi games so far have given me that event feeling. I don't ever just want another Star Wars. That's why I never watched like the Book of Boba Fett. Because it just felt like another half season of Mandalorian. And it's why I've not got around to the Mandalorian season 3 yet. Because I don't necessarily, I'm not personally here for just stories within that universe. They need to feel purposeful, which, you know, everyone says Andor is that, so I'm going to get to that eventually, but I don't necessarily feel that from this right now. And like I say, that's very much a me thing, but it's, I think Star Wars means different things to different people. Other people will love that kind of extra content, as it were, that's slowly becoming the main way to consume Star Wars, and it's just, I'm sort of left behind from that.
I think that's mainly because Disney have no idea how to make those events anymore. Like, they tried that with the sequel trilogy and it bombed, like, towards the very end, it completely fell apart. So it's like, it's weird because that's the kind of what I mean about like addressing Star Wars as like a thing, because they're trying to walk that line of like, how do we do the big event things? How do we do the next step that can match up with the Skywalker saga? But also we need to flesh out this entire world to plug all these different stories into. And I quite like the fleshing out the texture of the world stuff. I think Andor does that the best.
Yeah.
Because Andor and Rogue One reinforced the main series of movies that happened. It's a Andor, like, but, I don't know, rounds out the grittier side of Star Wars in a way that makes Luke's actions even more heroic.
Yeah.
And something like that. I think there's ways to do that like reinforces the good stuff or the wider, the main stuff. But yeah, if Outlaws, like, overall, gameplay wise, like you said, there was like one button takedowns, a standard sort of cover shooter fight. It was a bit Mad Maxy in terms of going from one thing to the next.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where, like, does it actually need to be Star Wars, or is it a glorified skin? Because,
That's kind of my question right now, and I would so want to be proven wrong, but like you said, some of the mechanics you just mentioned there, combined with the little helper that you have that can, you know, hack things in the environment.
Is it a cute little animal helper, is it?
Cute little animal helper that can hack things like you're playing Watch Dogs. I thought that was straight out of Watch Dogs. I could just identify all of the parts, and that's not a bad thing, but that's been my issue with Ubisoft for so long, where I wonder what the driving force, behind this game is. Like, what's the purpose of it, for lack of a better term? Is it just a way to collate a bunch of marketable mechanics within a marketable IP and then sell it to people? Like, what's the cohesion? What's the glue holding all that stuff together and reinforcing it? Because it's so rare that I've ever played an Ubisoft game that is more than the sum of its parts. It's often like these individual components, and you either like that or you don't.
No, that's a really good point. Ubisoft, like, they trade in nakedly showing you the parts that make up their games and then literally almost marketing it that way and go, hey, if you like that feature over here, it's over here too. Why don't you buy all these different things? And I feel like the bottom fell out of that across the 2010s, which is interesting because now it's like, you know, they had a whole bunch of stuff going on with the scandals around various staff members. There was this dude that was in charge of the what we would refer to as the Ubisoft formula that was all going through this one guy, and he's gone now. So the assumption is that the next few years of Ubisoft should feel fresher and newer and have all these different creative risks that this dude was blocking beforehand, but we're not there yet necessarily, at least like unless there's more into this game and we don't know yet.
Well, this is it. I don't think it was ever like, I know one person like in charge of the creative thing, but like then you have Yves Guillemot, was it last year, coming out and saying how he only wants to focus on mega franchises. And that's one of my biggest criticisms of the show, is that they've almost given up, I think, on their own mega franchises and just gone to other people's and said, can we have a go of that, please? Can we get a bit of Star Wars? Can we get a bit of Avatar? And we'll give you our mechanics because we only want mega franchises, and we're not actually asked anymore if those are ours or what. We're here cut a licensing deal.
Let's talk about Assassin's Creed just quickly, because that is the one mega brand thing that they're still going with. It feels like Far Cry's taking a little break, but Assassin's Creed has three main games in progress right now. The one this year being Assassin's Creed Mirage, but there's also Assassin's Creed Nexus, which is the VR one, which is in itself inspired, but it's like five key locations or something from AC123. And then there's Assassin's Creed Codenamed Jade, which is the ancient China one, but that's a mobile game. So it's like, that's just a weird thing. They've also got a new Division game called Resurgence that's a mobile game as well. But yeah, Assassin's Creed seems to be the one thing that they've just gone like, okay, we've had a few misfires recently. What the hell do we double down on that's actually sold pretty well? And I feel like if you don't address the story side of Valhalla, because a lot of people in the community like didn't like the way the end of that game sort of rolled out, and it is very ridiculous. I like how dumb it is, but I always liked how stupid Assassin's Creed was anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of Assassin's Creed and talking about mega brands and that idea of like doubling down on something that has a former success. Mirage is literally 2007 Assassin's Creed again.
Yes, and you know what? It's funny because we will be on record, Scott Tilford, so many times saying, I wish Assassin's Creed would go back to its roots.
Yeah.
And now it has, and we're kind of like, oh, I actually wish it would do something different now because I've played this before. And that's not necessarily my view, but I've seen that
doing
the rounds online. So it's funny because them going back to what they know is kind of what I've wanted, but it's also uninspired. Mm. I would take this version of Assassin's Creed over what Assassin's Creed became with Odyssey and Valhalla any day of the week.
Right.
But that doesn't mean necessarily that I'm going to suddenly start pre-ordering Assassin's Creed games again or even buying them day one. I probably will play through Mirage because it does seem like a smaller experience, a more concise experience. Mm. And I do like that style of gameplay more than what Odyssey and Valhalla and Origins brought to the table. Mm. But it still doesn't get me excited in the same way that I used to get about the series.
No, same. And it was a weird thing because, as much as everyone talks about Assassin's Creed going back to its roots, what people tend to mean is a focus on stealth. It doesn't mean literally remake the same game again and dress Basim the same way as Altair and have, like, you're dropping into the Assassin's stronghold from a thatched roof. It was, like, the exact same stuff. It's interesting watching the Mirage gameplay demo because you kind of forget just how well, how much the environment enforced the parkour side of it, which was, back in the day, one of the biggest selling points of the franchise. And maybe you can, like, you know, flesh that stuff out more. I don't think they are. I think in the gameplay demo, it still seemed like you're just holding a run button and your dude's just doing everything automatically.
Why I'm so skeptical of this game and why I cannot get on board with it is just because of where it started. Like, before we knew its title, we knew that it was like initially going to be an expansion for Valhalla,
something
that was going to be tacked on, and then it became this original game. And that the nature of its creation in that sense feels so, we need an Assassin's Creed this year because the other stuff we're working on has taken a long time, that I can't vibe with it enough, because I just wonder how much of this did you even want to do in the first place, and how much is just filling a gap with what you already know. Like, if it was built from the ground up as a new game, and who knows, maybe the original expansion was scrapped and this was. If it was built from the ground up with that in mind, to push the systems that have been dormant for a decade, to reinvigorate the parkour, to kind of give us the formula but better and improve it, I'd be there for it absolutely, but it just kind of feels like instead of going back and improving, they're just going back, like you
it's
said.
It's just like the whole idea in the original game, that whole idea of the control scheme being like it was like on Xbox, it was like X and B were your left and right arms, and Y was your head, and A was your legs. And they mentioned that loads before launch, and it was, oh, if you're going to climb a side of a building, you'd have to match all the button prompts and reach out with the right arm and everything else. And they largely ditched that towards launch. It was just hold A and right trigger, and like you just run up the side of a building or something. But if they're going back to, like I said, the roots, the idea of what was the, you know, Assassin's Creed going in, it was the idea of this acrobatic assassin who could get into places no one else could. That should be the gameplay system. Like the idea that, like, you know, you're approaching a target. That's another thing that I really liked about the original Assassin's Creed, was that you did have, it was like 7 or 9 targets and you can take them out in different ways.
Yeah.
And to this day, and it's like 16 years old, like Assassin's Creed, I remember how I took most of those targets out. Like I remember cornering the dude in the market square. I remember shiving the dude in his kidneys in the middle of a town square and then hiding on a bench around the corner. Like it's like a Hitman style takeout thing.
Yeah.
And I even remember when they did a little bit of that in Assassin's Creed Unity, because they made those kills more set PC. And like, I like the idea of going back to that. But when you view those targets and you view those environments in Mirage, assumedly, you should be able to envision like, oh, if I go that way, I'll take them out that way. If I set this in motion, I'll do this, and play into the assassin side of things. And the way that it looked was just kind of on rails. Like it was like auto running, auto getting you in place. You're hitting a button, you're taking a dude out, you're running away. Like, you know, you're getting the feathers again with the blood, yeah. Like the same. They're in the Assassin's Creed 1. There's even that nostalgic graphics filter.
Yes.
To like drain the color out of it or something, to try and make it look like 2007s. And it's just, I mean, like, it's not that I don't respond to it at all. I definitely see exactly what they're doing. And I am one of those like 3 people who love Assassin's Creed 1. I really love that game. So like, I have a soft spot for it, but it's just so nakedly pandering to like back in the day. Like, oh, can we get you to reinvest in when you believed that it could be something more back in the day?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, again, I personally can't criticize them too much for that, because I have been asking for that for years at this point. And honestly, for me, it's hitting at like the perfect time, because I've weirdly had this real Assassin's Creed 1 nostalgia recently. Okay. I've been watching videos on it. I've been wanting to replay it, because I've not touched the original since it came out back in 2007, 2008, or wherever it was. Uh-huh. And I've just kind of wanted to go back to it. So hopefully I'll get a similar, you know, experience with this game. But my issue is that I don't just want that from a new title. If I want to go back and play Assassin's Creed 1, I'll go back and play Assassin's Creed 1.
Yeah.
If I'm getting Mirage, I want to see where you've taken that foundation and use the 10 years of experience that you've had building the other games. Mm. And what can you bring over? What can you change? What can you improve? How can you make this the best version of it that it can be? And I haven't seen that yet, and I want to be proven wrong, and I'm definitely going to give it a go. And I've not said that about an Assassin's Creed game in a while, especially after being burnt with Valhalla. But before then, I didn't jump into Odyssey and didn't jump into Origins. So I will jump into this, and hopefully it's more than just a nostalgic retread.
I am curious what the next major game they rip off is, because Assassin's Creed Origins and Odyssey and then Valhalla were very much inspired by Breath of the Wild, and especially The Witcher 3.
Yes.
Because there was so there were just huge cultural touchstones. The main cultural touchstone right now is either Elden Ring or Tears of the Kingdom. And so like, obviously, whatever the next Assassin's Creed is that isn't Mirage will be heavily inspired by something. And I just wonder if that's what we'll get. Some weird like cobbling together this gadget thing to try and take people out. Because they did do a bit of that in Revelations when you made your own bombs and stuff. And it like didn't feel great.
Ah, this is...
What is the identity of this IP? That's the thing.
I said at the start of this video that I was mixed on this showcase, and I've been incredibly negative since. I don't think I've said one nice thing about them. But this is what frustrates me with so much with Ubisoft, is that they have these great franchises with so much character and so much personality to them. Assassin's Creed, Far Cry, Watch Dogs, bunch of others, right? And as the years go on, they dilute what made those things interesting in the first place by chasing other trends, by completely cannibalizing their own format and applying that to all of those franchises to the point where they all play the same. They all play like something else. They remind you of something else. And unfortunately, they don't do what they're inspired by better than their inspiration. So it just leaves you wanting to play those other games. And I just think that's a shame. Like the way Watch Dogs went, I will never forgive them for, because that thing I was so excited for, and yeah, it stumbled out the gate, but it had something and then it had nothing. Mm. Same with Far Cry. It had something with Far Cry 2 and Far Cry 3. And then in my opinion now, It has nothing. It's just another Ubisoft game, and it's lost whatever magic it had. Mm-hmm. And that's happened with all of these franchises, and it sucks to see. And it happened with Assassin's Creed, and that's the one that they have thrown their weight behind the most to try and salvage, where they've kind of let Watch Dogs die. But
yes.
I hope they're able to find whatever it was that made Assassin's Creed good in the first place and capitalize on it.
The thing that's fascinating with Assassin's Creed, watching it roll out, is that back in the day, you had a lead creator. You had Patrice Desilets, who was like leading those original games. And I think back initially, it was planned for either five or six games, with the overall arc being that it was Desmond in the present day acquiring the various abilities of his ancestors. And then this AC 5 or 6 or whatever it was going to be would take place in the present day, and you'd be a modern day assassin, and et cetera, et cetera. None of that happened because Patrice Desilets left Ubisoft, because they overstretched that middle chunk of the game, because they made a lot of money. And obviously we got Brotherhood, we got Revelations, and he was gone. I think by the time AC3 rolled around, he was out of it.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And then Black Flag was like that weird, what the hell do we even do? Like, and it worked for a lot of people, but that weird meta thing of like Ubisoft exists inside the game. And ever since then, they've never known what to do with it. They ditched the present day stuff, then they brought it back, and then like it's a bit more than ever now, and Desmond's back in it, but like it's just all over the place. And so it's one of those things where, like, one of the biggest parts of the appeal of the original Assassin's Creed was that it felt like a focused vision, and it felt like you, as the audience, didn't fully know what was happening. Like as the audience, it was like, why are there, like, computer glitches and weird visual effects and sci-fi-looking stuff in the trailers? What is that game?
Yeah.
And that was part of the appeal. And then, for me, the reveal of that was phenomenal. I love all the Subject 16 stuff from the very end of AC1. I thought that stuff was fascinating. Again, at the time, I was, like, a Lost fan, so I was already too sick and gone anyway. But I had a lot of fun with it. And so now it's like, yeah, how do you recapture that? You kind of can't, because it's out of the bag kind of thing. But it is still fascinating. In terms of Assassin's Creed, though, like I said, they already have a couple of other games here in as well, which we can touch on. One being Assassin's Creed Nexus, which is in itself taking some of the most well-known locales and characters and stuff from the original trilogy and doing it in first person. You're a VR's man.
I am.
Does this get you in?
It does, honestly. It does. Like, you know what? I feel like with Assassin's Creed, like you said, one of the best parts of it is the sense of place and the sense of movement. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that will become even more immersive in first person in VR. Like,
true.
I would happily just look around these locations, and that's all I want to do. Do you want to look at the architecture?
Don't want to climb with you one arm at a time.
I'll do some climbing. I could do that in Horizon, Call of the Mountain as well. The climbing mechanics in VR don't do much for me,
right,
honestly. But the sense of detail does, and the sense of scale especially does. So the idea of being in a game like this and being on the ground level and then being able to climb up to the tallest part of an area, that's exciting.
I want to dive into some hay.
Yeah, I want to get that sense of momentum. I want to get that sense of being outside and being in places that I will never visit, or in terms of pure timeline perspectives, never be able to properly visit and appreciate them from that level. Because say what you will about Assassin's Creed, but its level of artistry in the world design is impeachable. That like they've always had the best artists, best designers on that side of things, and they've always recreated these locations with stunning detail.
By far, their R&D department is second to none. Yeah. Like, I mean, I love walking around in Assassin's Creed Unity. Even when that game was broken and buggy as hell, the interiors of all those places during the French Revolution, that is a great walking through history thing. And I love that they plugged them into AC Odyssey, and I think it's in Valhalla as well. No, sorry, it's in Origins and Odyssey. Maybe it's in Valhalla, but you can do a history mode where it gets rid of all the combat, and it just walks you through the environments, just teaching you about everything. And I was like, I just love that it's like this virtual tourism thing.
This is, again, what frustrates me so much about Ubisoft. They clearly have, on a ground level, from a developer to developer standpoint, they have some people who are passionate about the games, who are quality with their work, who know what they're doing, and they just don't have that oversight and that management that, one, apparently doesn't make for a healthy work environment, but two, doesn't make for that creative cohesion that brings them all together.
A reason for all that R&D stuff to exist.
A reason for all of that stuff to kind of cohere. And that's always been such a shame, because there are so many, thousands probably, of talented people working across Ubisoft studios that don't have that kind of just like direction to make all of that stuff, again, more than the sum of their parts. And that's always been just a shame.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Because, hello.
Ah, oh man, there's so much to like about Assassin's Creed especially, but so much to just think, yeah, that makes you think, like, why did you go down this direction? Why did we spend so much time on this when this is so good over here?
I think as well, because they are researching these time periods and they are pulling from, you know, they have, like, real-life historical figures that they'll maybe, like, you'll do a mission for them or something. There are so many meatier stories that they could be telling. There are so many other sort of ways they could do something that is set in the French Revolution or whatever and not make it Assassin's Creed. You could do a whole thing about, like, an Assassin's Creed saga series if you're really that bothered about tying in the marketing side of it, because that's clearly the reason why they don't do that stuff. It's because AC just sells the most, and it's easier to keep doing that stuff. The last thing for Assassin's Creed is Codename Jade, which is their game set in ancient China, which all the comments on that, dislike bars huge, etc., etc., just because it's one of the most requested locations in for an Assassin's Creed game, either ancient Japan or ancient China, but it's a mobile game. Yeah. So it's just getting that standard backlash of, like, you were so close, you could have just put it on consoles.
I know, it's a shame. Like, you should definitely not give gamers what they want. Like, I just don't think so. Just because someone demanded something.
Hey, say Sonic Superstars. Oh, yeah.
You shouldn't just give them it, but, like, yeah, don't give them what they want, quote unquote, in a way that they definitely do not want.
Yes.
Like, have we learned nothing from the Diablo Immortal announcement? Like, come on, people. At least the people watching these showcases, I will concede, loads of people play mobile games, loads of people buy microtransactions in mobile games. The market for that is huge, but they're not the people watching these showcases or looking at these updates, and it's like, man, those audiences are not the same. When will you finally realize that?
I guess mentioning Diablo Immortal is worthwhile because that game on mobile makes a stupid amount of money. Yeah. So I guess that's probably just what they're seeing in this case. And it's like, let's just monetize that wider nebulous mass market that will just go, oh, Assassin's Creed on a phone. Cool. I'll just play it and I'll not talk about it. And that's it. They're just the people who just keep ticking away and making that much money. To be fair, in terms of the gameplay they've shown, looks awesome. Like, looks like it could just be on a console. I hope there's a Switch version made or something at some point. But speaking of, you know, having, like, identities being stripped over time and that initial sort of juice behind an IP just going away. And this is a game that I love. This is my most excited game. It's Prince of Persia.
Yeah.
The Lost Crown. That is another game that's been massively disliked, etc., because it has a Fortnite-style art style or whatever. I just think pure gameplay-wise, it looks awesome. And I love that they've fleshed out. They've explained that you play as a dude called Sargon and you're rescuing the prince,
which
I love the framing of that.
Yeah.
Prince Gas is there the dude that needs to be found. So they are just going down like a Metroid Dread kind of route, and there's just so many, hardly any games do this where they have a 2D framing and they zoom in and play with the perspective and show your character, like, you know, doing something, and then you zoom back out and then the move happens or whatever.
Right, yeah.
It was in a game called Counter Spy like 10 years ago.
I remember that game.
I love that game. Yeah. Counter Spy absolutely ruled, because you could take cover and then it would zoom in and you were in like a cover shooter and then you'd go back out again. It was really, really cool. Shadow Complex had bits of it because you could shoot in and out of the perspective. You could shoot dudes in the background. But like, for me, there's so much more that could be done with a side-scrolling perspective that is morphed with zooming in and having cinematics or having finishes and fatalities, I was going to say. Finishing moves and things like that. So I think The Lost Crown, the Prince of Persia game, that thing's style is sky high. That thing's visual punch is sky high. It's immediately memorable, and I immediately want to play it. It looks just so inviting. So far, like, I guess very little to do with Prince of Persia, but for me, that franchise has been soft rebooted for its pop culture period many times over. So
absolutely,
I do not care.
Man. Like, I thought it looked smashing. I really did. You know, like, I think I said in the last podcast that it wasn't my thing visually, and it still isn't, but from a gameplay perspective, it's hitting all of the right notes for me. Like you said, it feels fresh, it feels like a modern take on that genre, and it feels confident and it feels sophisticated. I read after the initial reveal that it had this kind of Metroid style framing, and, you know, to see more of that was exciting as well. It's honestly, the more I see of it, the more I think maybe my head will be turned and that I will end up buying it and loving it, because it's hitting all the right notes, man.
It's definitely one of those things where if you apply, you know, sort of like base Ubisoft management brain, they saw how well Metroid Dread did because it outsold its entire franchise or whatever on Switch. And I feel like they just thought, well, we don't really have any 2D like platforming game action platformers right now. Assassin's Creed ironically did have that run of them where it was China and Russia and one other one, India, I think. But they don't have a in motion Metroid contender. And whilst we're waiting in between Dread and something else, why not do that with some IP? Which, you know, whatever, like the original Prince of Persia was side-scrolling anyway, so they can argue it makes sense.
Well, that's it. And I think with a lot of their franchises, not only are they filling those gaps in the market and looking at what's doing well, but they're taking a lot of their franchises back to basics. We've just waxed lyrical about how Assassin's Creed is going back to the original framing and the original gameplay style. They've obviously got the Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake in the works, so they've got the 3D style of Prince of Persia covered. Why not take it back to its proper roots and also do a 2.5D side-scroller Metroidvania effort as well to supplement it? You've got teams that excel in that. Why not? I think they're, you know, perhaps cynically relying on nostalgia in a lot of ways for these titles, especially because we're also getting a Splinter Cell remake as well. But
is that ever coming?
Probably not.
Is that even real?
Probably not.
I don't know if it is.
But I'd take all of these games over these franchises being dead. The fact that we now live in a world where there are two Prince of Persia games coming out is kind of crazy.
What's the other one?
The Sands of Time, right?
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah,
I just said that there. You made me proper question myself. I was like,
no, I was thinking, is that they're doing like another new one? No, they're...
Oh, no, yeah. Just the Sands of Time.
Yeah. In theory.
You made me freak out. I was like, oh, my God, have I got something wrong? Are these two franchises?
I forgot they were even doing that because assumedly it would have been the remake first to remind people about the IP, and then they would have gone into The Lost Crown.
Yeah.
But now it's going to be the other way around. I think that Sands of Time is just going to get cancelled altogether. I know they've switched developers and everything, but...
I think because they switched developers, I don't think it will. They've taken it back to the people who created it way back in the day. They've got original developers back on board. They just released that really promising Q&A recently where they were talking about how they want to do it justice and stuff. I don't think they would invest that much in it if they didn't have faith in it. I think they would have cancelled it after they switched studios.
Yeah.
That's my personal thought anyway.
No, that would be completely fair if it was anyone other than Ubisoft, because they've done that exact same thing with Splinter Cell. They did a round table of people just going, I like Splinter Cell, do you like Splinter Cell? And we'll see how that stuff comes together. The last thing from Ubisoft that's worth talking about is Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, which is a very Far Cry style game. I just don't care about Avatar, but I don't know if you do.
I kind of do, man.
That's good.
And you know what? This is the horrible, petty contrarian in me, but the more people tell me they don't care about Avatar, the more I'm like, Avatar's really good. Maybe it's got something with it.
Do you know what's
James
terrible?
Cameron's movies. What?
Metroid Dread's terrible, mate. You should avoid that like the plague.
Yeah, give me some reverse psychology. Terrible. And I'll check that out, and I'll check out a bunch of anime that you've been trying to get me to watch.
Demon Slayer's horrific. No, definitely not anime of the year. Terrible.
Sincerely, though, outside of that... me being facetious there, I genuinely do think that Avatar like looks visually stunning. I was watching the Digital Foundry kind of deep dive into all of the games from the Ubisoft conference, and hilariously they also made the Far Cry comparison, which opened my eyes and made me realize that from a gameplay perspective it kind of is just the Far Cry framing. But out of all of the games that we've seen over the Summer Game Fest period, like Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, that's right
yes,
is one of the only proper next-gen looking games, I thought. Like, it looked incredible. The lighting that was on display, the detail that was there, the scale of it, the colors, everything just sort of made me think, okay, this looks gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I'm cutting it a lot of slack on the gameplay side of things, because as you know, I'm a graphics man. I'm a fidelities man.
He's a fidelities man.
And that really did put some rose-tinted glasses over my eyes, because I thought, well, at the very least, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah, I'm curious what you can do in it that you couldn't do in a Far Cry, because the bits where you're sort of taming various animals reminded me of Far Cry Primal. And I guess it's just that cynical brain that you get with Ubisoft stuff, where it's like, well, I guess you're bringing that AI model across and you're bringing that animation across,
yeah,
or whatever. But they did show some of the third-person things. They said that whenever you're riding on various creatures, it'll be third-person. The rest of the game will be first. And I do like a first/third-person split, because I like Rainbow Six Vegas. And I'll take that in any form that you can do it. But yeah, Avatar is the weirdest IP to me, because I don't know a single soul who's seen the new movie. But that thing is like the third highest grossing film ever or something. So it's just, I don't know who these people are. It's like the Diablo Immortal people. I don't know who they are, but they're propping this IP up something fierce.
I think with Avatar, like, obviously people have its problems with its storytelling and its characters, but I think, you know, even if you were a hater of the first movie and the second movie, I think everyone agreed that, at least visually, the world itself looked like somewhere you would want to go and explore.
Yeah.
I would.
All those mushroom plants that they're going to attack you, they all got like everything's got tendrils. everything's got like hair tendrils. And tendrils, and it's like, I don't know, it just looks like the bottom of the ocean on the top.
Which, yeah, absolutely.
I don't want that.
Why not, Scott?
It's full of fungi.
Yeah.
There's just so many mushrooms and tendrils and hair, and I'm just like, what is this?
Oh,
everything's got a ponytail.
Yeah, it's cool.
I don't think it is cool.
I think it's cool. So when I looked at the world, I thought, yes, you know, regardless of the films, that's a world I want to explore in a video game realm, and something that could be done justice in a video game realm, I think. But like you said, from a gameplay perspective, it looks fine. It looked okay. It actually opened my eyes more when, again, in the Digital Foundry video, they mentioned that some of the staffers at the studio making this game were from previously Crytek, who obviously made, you know, the Crysis games and the very first Far Cry as well, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
And the more I looked at the demo, the more I actually felt like it was closer to maybe that first Crysis than it was the other Far Cry games. And maybe if you're lean on that angle, in that freeform angle, I like it more, because it'll feel less formulaic, even though they are kind of the same thing.
I might be massively back in. If they do the stuff that was it not in Far Cry Instincts or Instincts Predator or whatever that spin-off thing was?
Yeah.
Where you can like get down on your belly and then turn over
and
crawl under like a hut and then shoot dudes like through the panels. Remember that? Yeah, when everything you shot people through the panels.
Yeah,
and Metal Gear
cool.
Solid 3 had it as well. Uh-huh. And it was like, and Call of Duty started doing it with Modern Warfare.
Ghost Recon Advanced Warfare.
Yeah, just let me shoot dudes through panels. I feel like that was a thing. And it's not a thing, but it could be a thing again. Something that's not going to be a thing is Pragmata, Capcom's Pragmata, and one of the original games shown off of the PlayStation 5 as we segue into the Capcom showcase. Something, a showcase that many people are saying shouldn't have happened. They would have just come away with the same amount of information if it didn't happen, because announced that something wasn't going to happen.
It was
at all.
Hilarious, and I'm gonna attack you live on air.
Please
right
do.
Now. Because when this was on, I wasn't going to watch it, and I didn't watch it.
Okay.
Because I was so disappointed in their showing last year that I just didn't believe they would have it.
Right.
But partway through, you text me saying, oh my God, they've showed Pragmata.
Yeah.
And then I dropped
everything.
Well,
I didn't say they showed. I just said, oh my God, Pragmata.
Well, there you go. Yeah. God. Well, I assume it must be from the showcase.
Yeah.
So I dropped everything and thought, bloody hell. If they're showing Pragmata, they must have some good stuff up their sleeve.
Uh-huh.
And then I logged online and saw that update was just an apology for them delaying the game.
I was going to say, my quick follow-up text was, oh, actually, no, it's just for the delay.
I missed that bit.
Yeah,
I only saw
go.
The top bit. You did rectify it, but it got me so excited and so hyped that I logged on, and then I just saw literally the same kind of style of apology that CDPR has done a million times, that we've seen a million times, where it's just the text box. It's like, sorry, we need more time, which is totally fair,
yes.
But it's just classic Capcom, isn't it? Because considering how good their games are, compared to sometimes how bad their marketing is, where it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to give you an update for this game, but it's an update that it's delayed.
I did think that in regards to the way that they handled the delay, it was very cute. I mean, they had the little girl character drawing something. You know what it's going to be, and it's a thing saying, sorry, it's delayed. And they did show some little bits of gameplay, so it's not like it was nothing at all. But it was just weird because Capcom are having the year of their lives right now with Street Fighter VI and Resident Evil 4 Remake. You know, in amongst everything else, the way that they're handling Monster Hunter, like they're doing the best they've ever done. And then I thought, well, that'll be the cherry on top of the icing on top of the cake, and then the cherry on top of the icing to have a really good showcase that just says, hey, by the way, maybe Devil May Cry 6 is coming or whatever else. And it's cool that we got more Dragon's Dogma 2 stuff, but overall, it was so fly. It was just like, here's a demo for Ghost Trick. Here's a Ace Attorney spin-off that's getting like updated or whatever. It was, I mean, I like those IP, but it was very little. Yeah. And I was like, you have so much momentum right now. Like, I guess, how hard would it have been to give us something? Maybe they don't want to do something that's more logo-based because they can't guarantee it or something. But I really thought they'd have something here, and they absolutely did not.
Well, that's it, man. They're not newcomers to this space.
No.
They're not like Ubisoft, who always has a big showcase every year. Capcom usually gives its stuff to the third party, no, to the first party publishers like Sony and Microsoft and whatnot to show them off. You know, you'll often get a Resident Evil game at a PlayStation showcase. You'll often get like Monster Hunter or Devil May Cry at another showcase, rather than them, you know, bring them all in and localize them all to their own big events. So I wasn't expecting much anyway, and even then they kind of had more than I thought they would, because I wasn't expecting DMC 6 to be at their thing. I thought we might just get, you know, updates for existing games. So the fact that we got Pragmata at all was a plus.
Well, that was why I immediately texted you. Yeah. I was like, they've got a thing.
Well, there you go. But it still makes me question why they even do it when they've showed most of this stuff off previously. And like you said, it was cool to get more Dragon's Dogma stuff, but we'd already seen it, and it's nice, but unnecessary.
Where's the Separate Ways DLC for Resident Evil 4?
Where is the Separate Ways DLC for Resident Evil 4, Scott?
That would have been a really open goal.
It would, and they tease it at the end of the main game. Spoilers, but they say the word Separate Ways. We know Separate Ways is coming. There's so much more in Resident Evil 4 that could even be used that was cut from the main release, that is in the main campaign of the original Resident Evil 4, that could be added to Separate Ways to bolster it out. Mm-hmm. Like, just give us a logo. Surely you've got a logo. Surely you got something.
Surely you got something. I think it's worth chucking in here that they did re-show Kunitsugami Path of the Goddess, which is like a platinum-style action game that was originally at the Xbox Showcase. I think the showing that it got here was better. I think most of it was the same trailer, but I felt like I saw more gameplay here. Maybe it's because I was freaking out too much at the Xbox one, but I like when Capcom do their DMC adjacent stuff, and it's cool just seeing a new IP, even though it reminded me a bit of, it's like Okami kind of meets Devil May Cry, or like whatever, you know, platinum action game you want to go to. I thought the art direction looks stunning, and I love the general approach they've got to just, you know, goddesses and old school sort of mythological beings, etc.
Yeah, I also agree, man. I think with Capcom right now, they've got their core franchises down. They have our trust with Monster Hunter, with DMC, with Resi, with all of the established franchises. Street Fighter, of course. Street Fighter, how could I forget? Obviously, a huge success this year.
Game of the Year in waiting.
All the fans, Game of the Year in waiting. But what else have they got? They've got these new games that they've announced now, but can they put the same stamp of quality on those that they can with the established franchises?
Well, I've got to bring up one thing, which is Exoprimal. They are throwing a lot of eggs in their live service basket, and I don't think anyone cares about Exoprimal.
This is what we forget, right? With Capcom of recent years, that, yeah, they make great single-player games, but they haven't given up on the live service dream. How many bad Resident Evil multiplayer spin-offs have we had? Reverse and the other one that I don't even know if it came out, but they tried twice, and it didn't work. And it's like, there's still elements of old Capcom in those projects that I don't necessarily love and don't want to get more focus.
I mean, Monster Hunter like is a live service game. Like, there's a lot of content plugged into that. That's one of the only ones that I feel... I mean, it's weird because they have live service elements in Street Fighter 6, in Monster Hunter. Like, there are ways to roll those things out. And like you said, Ouriverse was like their attempt at sort of making this platform for Resident Evil to plug different characters and whatever else into. But Exoprimal, I got off to such a horrible start because it like showed dinosaurs, it showed a redhead female protagonist, which everyone assumed was going to be Regina. Everyone assumed it was going to be something based on Dino Crisis. They renewed the Dino Crisis trademark, and there's like a questionnaire doing the rounds or something where they asked which of these IP would you want to see more of, and one of the options is now Dino Crisis. So I'm like, I see you guys thinking about this, and you're putting these little teasers out there to sort of stoke the embers a little bit. But I feel like every third-party publisher has to attempt a live service and just fall on their arse with it, like Anthem did, or Suicide Squad will do, or whatever. And it was just one one of those things where the entire time they showed Exo Primal, like all the live chats were just like F's in the chat. This thing is dead.
Yeah.
Asking people to pay for premium versions of it, etc. I see zero pull.
I honestly, before it was, what was the crossover that they announced before the Capcom showcase? It was at the either SGF or was at the Microsoft thing.
There's a Halo Jet Set Radio thing.
Maybe it was that. They showed a trailer of it. Is the point the fact that it's like out and it's having this crossover? And I was like, what? Like what? I didn't even know this game. I remember when it was first announced and everyone was annoyed that it wasn't Dino Crisis, but I didn't know it was still a thing. I didn't know it was a thing they were pushing this hard. So I was disappointed to see it. But yeah, like you said, it of course makes sense that all of these publishers are going to have a live service game or two or 10 to try and push, as it makes sense that they have a mobile game or two or 10 to push as well, because the amount of money to make in those sectors is outrageous. Mm-hmm. And to honestly expect them to give it up completely in both avenues is kind of ridiculous, because they're never going to not chase that money. And it sucks that it makes that much money and it means we get stuff like the mobile Assassin's Creed game and these games from Capcom, but they're unfortunately never going to go away as long as they're this lucrative.
That's the hilarious part, is that they released a Street Fighter mobile game, and there's a lot of different mobile versions of Street Fighter, but there was some premium version that came out either at the very beginning of this year or the end of last year that was just roundly despised because it's like this auto-playing microtransaction fest thing, and it's better not talked about in the same breath as something like Street Fighter 6. But yeah, I just feel like Exo Primal is like would have been commissioned during the days where everyone assumed Anthem would be the next big thing, which is what I still feel like Sony's trying to chase. Yeah. But overall, Primal doesn't seem like it's going to be landing very well. And it's out in a month.
Yes.
Like, that thing is just out in July. It's just in amongst, what, like five other Game of the Year contenders? Like, there's no way that it's going to contend general.
This is what I mean. Like, I completely just, like, got lost track with it. And then to see you get this big push and these kind of weird crossovers, I was like, okay, we're fully on this board again after it was off my radar for a long time.
Mm.
I don't know if anyone has, like, has it had, like, an early access thing or, like, a beta or anything? Played it yet, or are they just kind of pushing it?
It seems that the things that they were pushing during the stream were all, like, pre-order now and get these extra skins. Right. It was lots of skin packs. It was lots of deluxe stuff. It was, I think they highlighted the pricing tiers for the premium currency stuff. It just feels like, you know, live service 101. It feels like the thing that everyone's tired of at this point.
It is one of those RE-verse things where I'm like, did you release this? Like, are you still working on it? Like, what happened? Like, because these live service games, or these live service spin-offs from Capcom, anything that isn't like a mainline title, just it kind of comes out and it dies. It reminds me of like those Ubisoft live service games that we had, you know, those Battle Royale games and those kind of weird multiplayer games they released, and you were kind of like, oh, that came out? people played that?
That's actually been out, had two seasons and died?
Like, yeah, servers have already been shut off. Okay, yeah. I get that same vibe from these games. And again, not to end on a downer, but I just hope that's not indicative of their approach going forward. And I don't think it will be, judging on the success of Street Fighter 6 and Resi 4.
Same. Is RE:Verse actually out? I literally
don't know. I need to ask Sai, she'll know.
I actually have no idea. Because that was like bundled in with something else, some Village DLC thing.
Well, this
didn't it come with that?
I don't know. I can't remember what was going on with it. I think it is out. I can't even remember the name of the one that was bundled with the RE3 remake. That might be Reverse for all I know, but there was definitely two.
Yeah.
There was one that was kind of like Dead by Daylight E, where you played as a bunch of survivors and you played as someone who was controlling all of the bad guys, and you could spawn in as Nemesis and stuff, or the Mr. X.
Mm-hmm.
And that one died, and then I think RE:Verse happened. I don't know if it's out, and I'm frightened to check. Quite frankly.
The difference between the single player output from Capcom and the multiplayer side of things feels like two completely different companies at this point. Same with Square Enix stuff. If you compare Final Fantasy 16 or 7 Rebirth with the weird one-off multiplayer stuff that Square Enix keeps trying to do with like Final Fantasy Battle Royale and everything else.
That's a great comparison, because that is the exact same. When you have something great that everyone loves, a lot of people love, the Final Fantasy 7 remake, and then every conference, every year, you get these Final Fantasy VII spin-offs that nobody wants. Because
do you want a young Sephiroth? No!
It's like Battle Royale games and mobile games, and we're going to milk this until everyone's dead. And it's like, guys, you got something good.
That Final Fantasy VII Battle Royale thing, it was called The First Soldier. I didn't even realize that had a full release, that it's now dead.
Yeah,
like, I saw the press announcement saying that they were shutting it down, and I was like, did you even fire it up? Like, was that a thing?
This is it. Like, this is what I mean. Like, all of those games are bundled into the same sort of bin at this point. And I don't know whose fault it is. Is it the publishers who know they're not going to succeed and haven't marketed them? Or have they marketed them and they've just bypassed me entirely and not found anyone to play them because no one is interested and they didn't do a good job of getting people interested and now they're all dead. It's just, there are people who can do live service as well. There are good live service games out there, ones that I love, but you can always tell the half-assed ones.
Well, I think if even Naughty Dog, I know this was like after a consultation period with Bungie, apparently, can't get their Last of Us live service thing over the finish line to like do something with that IP in a live service context that is appealing enough to at least take a gamble on, then it's very, very hard to get a live service thing off the ground to make it work. Halo died trying to chase that as well.
Absolutely. And you know what? I don't think we've talked about the Naughty Dog live service stuff since that report came out, but that was interesting because not to slag off Bungie, they are masters at what they do. They've obviously got to a successful place with their live services in Destiny 2, but man, I don't want to see them influence Naughty Dog. Like, if I go to a Naughty Dog live service game, I kind of want to see their spin.
See what they do.
I don't want to see the sanitized version or the most marketable version of a Naughty Dog live service, whether it's good or bad. I kind of want to see them do something different with it. They might not have been doing that. They might have been trying to chase what is marketable and just doing a bad job of it. I don't know, but I kind of want to see those studios at least try and fail at something original rather than get another one of these million live service games that have just gone straight into the landfill that no one cares about.
I mean, the hope is that they had some idea for what would be like a half a year or a year's worth of content under a Last of Us context, but also there's the potential where it was just a bunch of different skins for your character or whatever. But you would assume that Bungie were being fair when they analyze stuff, but I agree. I'd be very curious to see what a very story-focused dev did for a live service and whether that could be more narratively satisfying or whatever it is. But yeah, overall, we're coming to the end of the current portion of the various video game live shows and everything else, and there's not anything for another month or so,
I don't think.
I don't have a specific date down, but there's one in the next month or so.
I'll tell you what, I'll whisper some sweet nothings into your ear hole right now. You've got Final Fantasy 16 next week, my friend.
Hell yeah, I do. To be fair, Final Fantasy 16's demo is out. And oh my God, right? I need to shout this out. I don't know whether to do this in a video. I'm doing a separate podcast thing. Square Enix, for as much as we're saying that their multiplayer stuff is terrible and slagging them off in the middle, so it's a horrible decision with NFTs, etc. They are killing it with the demo game. Every single one of their games that has come out recently from Triangle Strategy to Final Fantasy 16 or whatever lets you play such a massive chunk of the game for free with all your data carrying over to the finished release. You can play about 8 hours of Triangle Strategy for free.
Wow.
Like, that was the thing that sold me on the game. It was when I had COVID and I was just sitting in bed playing it all day long, and maybe I was delirious from the vid, but I thought it was a really good game, and then I bought it and carried over and just kept going. And it's one of those things where hardly any studios of their level prioritized either vertical slices or slicing off part of the game. But you remember when they did it with Resident Evil 2, when it was like you can play like 90 minutes or whatever,
yes.
And then maybe it was 45, something like that, and then but it was a finished code. It was like near finished, if not finished code. It's such a good model for what the industry could be, to let people know what they're buying. And it's like, you go gold with the code, you cut off the start of the game, you have some sort of point, you know, where you can't go any further, and you just give that to the consumer because you have faith that they won't get their full fill on that, and then they can go into the next thing.
Especially in the modern age. I could kind of get it back in the day if you had the excuse of, we don't want to give too much of the game away when games were like 8 to 10 hours. You don't want to give a 2-hour chunk. But, I mean, Final Fantasy 16 is going to be 100 hours, 80 hours. You're not missing much if you get like the opening 2 hours, if you give that away and it convinces people, because Final Fantasy 16 is a, you know, I'm outside of this bubble, but it's changing a lot. It's new, it's fresh. People might not be won over by it on paper alone, but if they get to try it, I've seen nothing but excellent headlines since that demo dropped about it convincing fans who were on the fence, and it's like, that's what a demo should do.
There was if you pie charted my head, there was a part of me that was like, oh, it's not my Final Fantasy, I'm not that sure about it. I think we talked about it in one of the other previous podcasts where I was like, I have faith in it, I love Final Fantasy and everything, but they are changing a lot. It is playing like Devil May Cry, it's not playing in turn-based and whatever. The demo sells you entirely. Like, once you see the vision, once you see what they're doing, once you see the amount of just fresh ideas they're bringing to it, especially in the combat. But it's more the scale, it's more what they've built, and just how immediate that sort of like view of Final Fantasy is and how mature it is and everything. The fact that you can just like play like 2-ish hours of the final game, like, that's unbelievable. In this climate, that's unbelievable.
Yes, it is.
I just want to shout that out.
And I'm honestly incredibly annoyed because I didn't really want it to be bad, but I also kind of did because I don't have the money to buy it. And I'm like, now I need to find
just go play
some
the demo.
£70.
Break your no demo rule.
I know. No, but then I'm going to want to buy it even more, and that's just no good for anyone. I need to get paid.
Just
for
trade. What can you trade in?
I don't know. What can I trade in?
Dead
that's
Island
a good
two?
Point. I didn't get that physically.
What have you got that's physical that you could just get rid of?
Nothing. This is the issue.
I'll give you my Dead Island 2 and you trade that in. That'll free up some money for the old 16. But yes, for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you. And we'll catch you very soon.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.